You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here is your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
I'm Julie Broadway, president of the American Horse Council.
And I'm Emily Stearns, Health, Welfare, and Regulatory Affairs Liaison for the American Horse Council.
And you are listening to the special monthly American Horse Council episode of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for May, people! May 2026! Who knew we were already this far into the year?
It's time to hear from the American Horse Council in this monthly episode of Horses in the Morning.
So, understanding the economic impact of our industry isn't just interesting facts and figures. It's really useful information. It's the difference between saying this matters and actually being able to prove that this matters. Every industry, whether it's healthcare, hospitality, high-tech manufacturing, can point to the number of jobs, the investment, and the economic impact that they make. And the horse industry is no different. We just don't always share the data in one place to show it. And that's one of the things we do at the American Horse Council is a national economic impact study. So when you really want to understand your industry's footprint, it changes how you advocate and how you make decisions and how you show up in a conversation about policy and funding. So today's episode, we are talking about how we measure impact and why it matters right now. And Emily, this is something we're both pretty deeply invested in at the Horse Council. I'll start with you. When you're explaining the economic impact to someone for the first time, what is your elevator speech? What's the quick version of that?
It's so hard to have a quick version of this, but I usually tell people, you know, the horse industry is everywhere. You just don't always see it all at once. You've got breeding, competition, recreation, tourism, plus all the small businesses and their support services. And it's often kind of captured in pieces instead of as a full picture. And so what the economic impact study does and what we work on at AHC kind of all the time is connecting all these dots. And it kind of pulls everything together into something measurable and credible that we can actually use in the real world, whether that's with policymakers or partners or even kind of when we're talking to the industry itself on our webinars and things like that.
Yep. And that's such a key point because we all know the industry is significant, but being able to quantify that in a way that resonates outside of our own circles is a completely different thing.
Totally. And it gives us that kind of shared language and really helps level the playing field, I think, when we're sitting at the table with other industries that already kind of have that data.
Yeah. And in previous episodes, we've talked about our favorite economic impact study facts and figures. So we're not diving too deep into all that math today. We're going to walk through why this study matters, why you should care about this study, why now is the time that we need to be doing a new study, and what actually goes into making it happen, and how the results are ultimately used. But before we go too far, let's take a quick break and hear from one of our sponsors. Today's segment is brought to you by Markel Insurance. They have proudly served the equine community for over 50 years, providing insurance for horses and horse-related businesses. While you focus on your horses, let Markel protect you. Contact Markel today for an insurance solution for your horse, your farm, or your equine business needs. Visit markelhorse@farm.com or call 800-842-5017 to obtain a quick and easy quote from their knowledgeable team. It's your investment, and Markel would like to help you protect it. So today we're changing the whole formula for this episode. Emily and I are actually going to interview each other. So welcome to the show, Emily.
Thanks, Julie. And I just want to say thanks for having me. And also welcome to the show, Julie. So let's start with the big question. Why does the industry need the economic impact study?
Okay, well, I talk about this all the time. People are probably sick of seeing me and hearing me talk about this. But at a high level, this is all about visibility and credibility. It creates awareness of the industry. It builds interest both inside and out of the industry. And from our perspective at the council, it allows us to clearly position the horse industry as a meaningful contributor to the economy. It also strengthens our relationships. When we're talking with congressional offices, federal agencies, or even media, having data changes that conversation. It makes it more concrete and more tangible. So it's not just about an external thing. There's an internal value too.
So I think what we talk about a lot is it really builds pride within the industry, right? And when people see the scale of what they're part of, it really reinforces engagement. You know, I'm part of this billion-dollar industry, and I'm doing my thing, and I'm part of this bigger picture. But it also really helps kind of identify partners, and we talk about that larger ag ecosystem because you start to see how it's all interconnected. So we have the industry with agriculture, we have the industry with tourism, we have these small businesses, and it's all kind of marching forward together. This is this big machine. So Julie, why now? Why is this the right time for a new study?
Well, I'm confident that somebody out there is saying, boy, I don't really, do we have to listen to this? This does not seem like it's really all that significant and why it's important. We try to do the National Economic Impact Study about every 5 years, and a lot has changed in the past 5 years. When we've seen economic disruption, we've seen shifts in participation, we've seen some business closures, and there are definitely changes in the way people engage or interact with horses. We've also had some federal stimulus programs and some broader economic shifts that have impacted operations. And then there's the tax code changes from 2017, which has influenced investment and business decisions all across the industry. So if we're using old data, we're not telling an accurate story, and we really need to be as current as we possibly can.
Yeah, and I just wrote a big note for today when we were talking about kind of what's changed the last 5 years of tariffs. Because I feel like just as one example of the economic drivers the last 12 months even is tariffs. And so just thinking of tariffs alone and all the questions we've had in the last year from our small business members and our large business members and our, you know, the Canadian Equestrian Association just gives a good idea of like how even something like geopolitics impacts the industry on a large and small scale.
Okay, so let's jump into the kind of questions we get all the time about what's included in the study and what's not included in the study and why.
And I'm going to give the canned response, and then I'm going to expect you to extrapolate on it because I always feel like a little kid looking to the teacher. Like, I can read off the front what's in it. And then you do such a great job of kind of explaining it all out. So the economic impact study captures both direct and indirect economic impact across the industry. And I say that fully knowing I came very close to failing economics 101 in college. So not just spending within the horse world, but also how that spending kind of moves throughout the broader U.S. economy.
Yeah. And so a great example of that is, let's say you own a farm and you employ somebody who comes and mucks your stalls and feeds your horses and that kind of thing. So wages that you pay that individual is like a direct investment. Okay. But that person then goes into the community and they shop and they do other things. And those are indirect expenses, and it's a trickle-down effect. So everything sort of builds together. What specifically is included is horse population, employment, land use, demographics about horse owners, volunteer involvement, and we are actively gathering input to make sure the survey reflects all aspects of the industry. When we did the last study, I think we did 20 different types of surveys to try to get at every little nuance in the industry. And right now we're compiling that list of additional questions that the last survey didn't get answers to. And we're going to see how they fit into the mix for this next one.
I feel like you're going to hate me for suggesting this on air, but is it worth saying, if you're listening to this and you have a burning question about the industry economic wise and you want to know the answer, email it to us at info@horsecouncil.org.
Absolutely do that, please, because between each study, I keep a list of questions people have called and said, I went through the report and I don't see the answer to this, and I write it down. So right now we're at that point where if you've got something else you want to know, send it. However, remember, this is an economic impact study. This is not like a market research study. So we don't really look at consumer spending habits and a lot of those kinds of things. You send me your question anyway, but don't be offended if we say that's a little outside the scope of what this study's going to be about.
We did ask some fun questions though last time, like what we had that one of my favorite questions we did that we talk about a lot when we travel is what got you into the industry? And it's that word cloud we put together. Mm-hmm. And like the biggest word is horse crazy kid. That the answers we got from all those open-ended text responses was, I saw horses as a kid and now I'm here forever. So that was a fun one. That wasn't necessarily a financially driven economic question, but does tell us long-term about how we get people in the industry and keep them here and kind of the health of the industry. So I think it's easier at this point to say like what's not included compared to what we are thinking about including. Julie, why don't you tell us? Yeah, what's not included?
As I said, we don't do what we call market research. So there's not a whole lot of that in there. Might be a little bit, as Emily said, maybe a taste at the ice cream cone, but not the whole ice cream cone. But the one thing that's really important for people to understand is this is not a census. We do not hire people who go out into your community and count how many horses they see. This is all based on survey data and secondary research that we collect and then data modeling. And it highlights the broader contributions. The primary focus, again, is on economic impact. But I had a gentleman not long ago, Emily, he was just insistent that he wanted somebody to physically come and count his horses. And I said, not even the USDA, National Agricultural Statistics Service, goes out and physically counts horses.
That is a very large soapbox of ours that we are happy to climb on for an entire episode.
Yeah.
And so if you're out there wondering why that's not happening and you want to listen to us talk for a long time, again, please info at horsecouncil.org. And that is, you know, just as a little sidebar, that is a line item we ask for in the farm bill pretty consistently every single time the farm bill comes up. The USDA has told us if we want someone to go out and count all the horses in the United States, that's what a $15 million.
Yep.
If we get the US government $15 million, they'll go out and do that for us, which we just, if there's a big fish out there wishing to donate that, we're happy to help organize it. But so again, there's these different data collections. You just mentioned USDA and NAS, and we talk frequently about how that's a census and how it misses a large part of the industry. So what other data collection initiatives are out there and how does this differ from them?
Well, so they each are done for a different reason and they have different purposes. So our study at the American Horse Council is the most comprehensive. We include every breed and discipline, we include every profession, every job, you name it, we include it in what we do. The U.S. Department of Agriculture and the National Agricultural Statistics Service, or NAS, they do every 5 years, not on the same 5-year schedule we're on, but on a 5-year schedule, they do what they call a census, but it is limited to horses that are on what they define as working farms. So if you have a riding facility where you're just boarding, training horses, teaching lessons, you probably don't qualify for the NAS survey. The best example I can give you is in 2023, our study said there are 6.5 million horses in the U.S., and the USDA study said there are 2.6 million horses. So you see the vast difference between the scope of the different studies that are done. In addition, the AVMA, the American Veterinary Medical Association, does what they call a pet survey, and they ask pet owners if they happen to own a horse. So it's about pet ownership data. And so it's an even smaller population than the other two. So each of those are useful for their respective audiences, but in very different ways.
And so how does us knowing the population of horses matter in terms of understanding the overall economic impact?
Well, I can offer a couple of thoughts. So when we think about the national herd, knowing the full comprehensive number really positions us to be able to argue, for example, in the Farm Bill to ensure that we've got adequate veterinary resources in rural communities. We look at the vaccine stockpile. We look at a lot of other programs that are through the Farm Bill. And the Farm Bill is using all of the data that comes from NAS based on 2.6 million horses. And we need all those programs to be stood up to support 6.5 million horses.
So in terms of that 6.5, outside of the health, like in terms of understanding what's driving like small businesses mm-hmm. and people spending in the industry, traveling to horse shows, is there a huge difference in the population? Like, would there be a huge difference statistically of the amount contributed to like the overall GDP, which we talk about in terms of that 2.4 coming out of NAS and the 6.7
yep.
we think yep. we have?
Yep. The number of jobs is different. The number of annual contributions to GDP would be different. And I would also add that a lot of investment advisors and startup companies turn to our study to try to look at what is the potential for a new product they want to bring to market, or where they might want to locate their headquarters based upon populations and where they are, all kinds of different ways that the data is used.
And so, you know, we'll talk about next a little bit of like why we do this and stuff like that. But who ultimately is responsible for managing and overseeing and funding this 5-year project?
Well, I think most people think that's the American Horse Council. And it is to a certain extent. But it's really the industry, because we do not have government funding or a checkoff program like some other livestock commodities do. So it's really up to the industry. We go out, we look for advertisers and sponsors and individual contributors and breed associations and discipline associations. Everybody needs to step up and be part of this. And so my short answer is it's all of us' responsibility.
So kind of like rising tides lift all ships.
Yep.
Yeah. So that we're driving the boat, but we can't lift the boat nope. ourselves. We nope. just point the mathematicians in all the different directions, because especially in terms of like sourcing all the data we get that goes into this, right? So this isn't just like we hire the economists, we contract the economists and set them loose. Like, they rely on us to figure out relationships with the breed registries to understand how it goes. We don't just kind of set the economists free and let them do all the work, right? We rely on the industry to let us know how many breed registrations they had in the last 5 years. And the economists use that to kind of extrapolate out trends and things like that. They get information from the implant software in terms of all the magic economy little hamster wheels behind the magic curtain. And they put in all the data that we get from the industry. But if we don't get help and information from the industry, it's like the blind leading the blind. So we really need the industry to lean in just in terms of the information that's gathered in general.
Yeah. When people come back to me, Emily, after the study and they want to take exception to a number, I always have to remind them, I can only provide what came in. So it's really incumbent not only for the financial support of doing the study, but that people lean in and participate in the study, because the data is only as good as what we put into it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That old, I'm going to keep throwing out, the old sayings today. This is what happens when you and I are the guests. We don't have anybody smarter than us to talk us through it. But just coming from a data science side, the old adage of garbage in, garbage mm-hmm. out. And we need the good information to be able to have this really quality study. So all of this, it's not done for free, right? So we have to pay these data scientists to help us extrapolate this economic data. So every 5 years, what does this cost us at the Horse Council through the foundation to run?
Well, it does vary from year to year. I would say right now the quotes that I'm getting are somewhere between $300,000 and $400,000 to do the national study. And then if you want a state, what we call a state breakout report, which is a custom report that's just for your state or for your breed or for your discipline or for your community, whatever that breakout report looks like, they're about $35,000.
And that's the fun part, too, because I think we've talked about the state breakouts before. But last round, we had a couple discipline breakouts and we had a county breakout. And those were just as fascinating as the individual state breakouts.
Yeah. One of the ones we did last time that I was really impressed with was Long Island, New York. They were feeling that equestrian appreciation for equestrian activities on Long Island were waning, and they wanted to substantiate their contributions so they could make their case to continue to keep that thriving industry there. We did one for Jacksboro, Texas, who wanted to build a new show arena, and they wanted to convince their town council how much tourism dollars and how much business it would bring and how many jobs it would bring to the community. So there's lots of different ways to crank this model and to spit out results that people can consider.
So with that cost, how do we fund this?
So it starts now. So what happens is we get our quotes together from a couple of different sources. We evaluate their methodologies. We look at pricing and all a bunch of other criteria. We identify the one agency that we'd like to use, and we begin some discussions with them, make sure we're all clear on what the final product's going to look like, what the price tag's going to be. And then we start fundraising. We start calling and we start writing and we start trying to get people to pledge and to help us fundraise for it. I do a lot of, what do they call those? Stump speeches at various places where I'm saying, okay, guys, here's your opportunity. You want to understand the economic value of the U.S. Trotting Association, harness horses. Here's your chance. Get yourself a breakout study and we'll boil that down for you and tell you what you're contributing. And so we just start beating the drum as hard as we can, Emily.
So how do the states pay for a state breakout? Who's in charge of that?
They are responsible for their own fundraising. And what generally I've seen is, let me pick a state like Maryland. They almost always do a state breakout study. They've got a good network within the state, and they will canvas those resources and cobble together what they need to get a study done. There are states that come back and say, oh, gosh, $35,000 to get a state breakout seems like a lot of money. I will tell you, if you try to do it on your own, it's going to cost you a whole lot more than $35,000. You're basically getting the value and the benefits of what we're doing on a national level, but boiled down for your state. Mm-hmm.
And I think you mentioned before, some states, even the Department of Ag, if the state horse council, if you're saying, I want to get one for my state, it's worth reaching out to your state Department of Ag, or sometimes the state Department of Ag's even lead the charge in terms of commissioning a state breakout.
We'll see in a state, we'll see Department of Ag, we'll see Department of Tourism, we'll see a number of different departments that will all say, okay, I can contribute a little bit, and they sort of pull it all together. Mm-hmm.
So that's all kind of like how the sausage is made on the back end. And we've talked a little bit about what the point of it all is, but where do we see kind of the biggest impact once the study is done?
Policy, first and foremost. You know, it turns into an advocacy tool for us to influence policy and legislation. It helps us engage more effectively with decision makers, increase awareness, supports fundraising, helps agencies understand sort of the scale of the industry. Did you know that the outdoor recreation industry does economic analysis every year? And equestrian is number 6 in the ranking, not far behind boating and RVing, I think.
I feel like what you've told us from the last one, maybe, was that equestrian is bigger than RVing and motorcycling combined or something like that.
It's amazing. It's amazing what it is.
Yeah. And so, like, I think it's also important, too, to discuss when we talk about impacting policy, what does that mean? And especially, like, in our work and what we do. So we can talk about it. We talked about it a little bit on the regulatory side, like making sure USDA has the information they need to create effective health and wellness policy and regulations for horses, making sure they know we have this many horses going through import-export and we need this much support from the USDA for import-export. But what about on the legislative side? Like, what do you and Amanda see in terms of impact there?
Okay, before I go legislative, I'm going to just remind everybody. Remember a couple of years ago when the Department of Transportation wanted to implement electronic logging devices? We use the economic impact study to say, do you understand how large an industry we are and how many people this is going to impact? And we were able to convince them that they needed to change their plans. So I can give it from that point of view. But then right now we are pushing for some new rules and regulations and some new legislation around the Horse Protection Act. USDA didn't understand that we have 50,000 horse shows a year across the country. So we use data like that. We're working on some new import-export rules for high health, high performance, and we're using the data for that to say, this is how many horses are coming and going. Here's what all that's going to look like. So there's lots of different ways that we can take the data and use it for trying
to make our especially like labor stuff, understanding how not just how many jobs our industry has, but our gap and our need for increased labor. What was that number? I think you found that we have like over 100,000 jobs that need to be filled.
Yeah. In the last study, we asked the question, if you were in need of additional resources, employees, workers, what would that number be, full-time and part-time? And we had 125,000 jobs, full-time and part-time, that were gaps. So when we're arguing about guest worker visas, because we rely a lot on guest workers, we use that data.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing we didn't highlight as well that we like, that we don't just like to talk about, but that I think is a good highlight out of the economic impact study, last one, is the volunteerism and the number of volunteers we have in the industry. And we've talked about this before. We did a whole episode on volunteering and that. The industry is really driven by a lot of community involvement and volunteer involvement, and that gets captured in this as well.
Yep, indeed.
So for anybody listening out there who thinks maybe they want to support this, what do sponsors get out of supporting the economic impact study?
Well, of course, they get input regarding the study surveys and questions. Of course, they get some recognition, their logo, their name, et cetera, on the report, on our website, in the press releases, those kinds of things. They get complimentary copies of the final report. We give them an invitation to what we call our preview webinar. So just the consultants and us and our sponsors, and they get to hear sort of the findings before everybody else does. They get an invitation to attend the Congressional Horse Caucus unveiling, because we call a meeting of the Horse Caucus and have congressional members come over and unveil the results there. We have town hall meetings about the results and look at trends and what are some gaps or action items we think we need to do. And sponsors get involved in all aspects of that.
In terms of inputting regarding the study, what does that kind of look like? Like, I don't want people listening thinking, oh, we're letting whoever the biggest money giver is to like write all the questions and guide how this goes.
No. So depending upon your sponsor level, we will give you an opportunity to submit 3-5 questions, a handful of questions.
Out of, I think we had like 30 questions total on the last survey.
But the consultants really, the American Horse Council, not so much, but we do have some say. But the consultants really look at those questions and tell us if that question fits with an economic impact study, or it's a question that's important enough or useful enough to do a little appendices. We did that last time where we had some questions, or it's not a question that they think is appropriate for either of those situations. Or if there's problems collecting that data, like that's a really interesting question. We just don't know how we would get at it. And so we have to kind of think through all those kinds of things. So we don't just say, oh, great, we've got a great sponsor and they're giving us a big amount of money and they get to say, no, they get to participate in the discussion. They get to have a little role in helping us with the surveys. But generally speaking, the consultants come back and tell us what's going to be included and what's not.
Okay, so I think the final question of the day is, and we mentioned this before, is how can people get involved? Do we have a timeline? How can they support this?
Okay, so right now we are in the analysis stage of looking at the responses to the bids. And probably sometime in April, we'll make a decision about the consultant. We'll start the fundraising probably shortly thereafter. We'll fundraise for several months at least. It might go on longer, but what we have.
And we're talking about 2026, just to clarify, right now.
Right now. And what we also find is that we will start some survey design, that kind of thing. We won't actually begin collecting data till probably 2027. because it'll take us a while to get all of those surveys and all the methodology and everything together. So there'll be a working group for a while that's kind of pulling all it together while we're still fundraising. And we have to raise, my rule of thumb, folks, I'm really transparent about this. We have to raise 80% of the total needed in order for me to confidently sign a contract and say to the consultants, okay, I'm going to be able to afford to pay this. Because I don't want them knocking on my door when I run out of cash saying, okay, cough up some more and I not have enough. So we have all those nuances. Our goal is to publish the new report right at the end of 2027 or very first thing of 2028. We're kind of talking through that with the various bidders right now to try to figure it out. So you want to get involved? Feel free, reach out to us. Tell us what way you'd like to get involved. Try to, you know, happy to give you different examples of sponsorship levels that we had, different ways you can be part of this, that kind of thing. So
what's that email address?
That magical email address. It's info@horsecouncil.org. So drop a note over there and we'd be happy to talk to you.
Well, Julie, I just want to thank you for taking the time to join us today on the podcast.
You, appreciate your time, too. And I hope that everyone has got a better understanding of why we want to do an economic impact study and what the value of it is, and they want to get involved. Thanks, everyone. Okay, our legislative and regulatory update for this episode is brought to us from Equestrian Directory. This is the complete guide for horse enthusiasts, created for owners, riders, professionals, and businesses of all disciplines to connect within the horse community. More than just a business directory, it also features content on trending topics, best practices, and innovators in the industry, plus tips from the pros. That is put together by Enso Media Group, and it's published by them as a multifaceted marketing firm that is dedicated to all things equine. And they produce high quality print and digital publications and a number of other products. And their team has been together for over 60 years of combined experience in the publishing industry and has a passion for horses. So thanks to them. Okay, as we start to wrap up, Emily, I want to come back to talking just a minute about the American Horse Council Foundation, because a lot of what we talked about today, especially the economic impact study, really sits within the broader work of our foundation. The foundation's entire reason for being is research, charitable work, and scholarships, and a laundry list of grants and other programs that we offer.
And if you're still with us and made it this far of just listening to Julie and I talk at each other, please just stick through this little part because it's important to us and it means a lot to us. And the foundation is really where a lot of the industry-wide research and education and kind of collaborative initiatives within the Horse Council live. And it allows us to take on projects that go beyond any one segment of the industry and instead focus on kind of shared challenges and opportunities.
Yeah. And so one of the biggest examples of that is the United Horse Coalition. So you may remember that years ago, based on some research that had been done at an industry forum, we created the Unwanted Horse Coalition, and we changed the name of it a few years back to the United Horse Coalition because we are united in wanting to help horses at risk. And we also thought unwanted doesn't accurately describe those horses. They are wanted. They're just in a difficult situation. So I think many people have heard about that effort, but may not fully understand how it fits into this overall initiative that we have.
Yeah, so a big part of that work with the UHC is education and helping owners understand what responsible ownership is, including like responsible breeding, responsible rehoming, what available resources are if they get into trouble and need help in terms of affording their horse, affording vet care, needing short-term support, and kind of what their options are before a situation becomes a crisis. And it also serves as kind of a central hub for information. So it connects people to aftercare and other welfare organizations, different kinds of rehoming options, and also can provide just some education on what end-of-life decisions and opportunities are out there if you need euthanasia for your horse. And really, it's built on an industry collaboration. So it brings together all these different organizations, and it's not discipline-specific or region-specific.
Yeah, and that collaboration piece is something we see across a lot of what the foundation does.
Yeah, and my favorite, well, I'm very biased because I've been here since the beginning for it, but the Equine Welfare Data Collective, or the EWDC, which operates through the United Horse Coalition, that's another like huge collaborative project that came across from in the beginning days, AAEP and the ASPCA and the Right Horse when it was part of the Watershed Foundation. And historically, there hadn't been a consistent kind of national data set around equine welfare. And then this came to live in UHC and the American Horse Council Foundation because it was really seen as that kind of neutral collaborative entity.
Yeah. And the purpose behind all this research is just to make sure we understand trends and we're making really smart, informed decisions.
Yeah. And it really worked to help the industry as a whole understand things like where horses were coming from, how they're leaving shelters, what their kind of general outcomes were. And it really brought consistency and kind of professionalism to that data. And it's been pretty cool to watch the industry, especially the welfare side of things, identify what programs are being most effective and kind of lift them up.
Well, and the most important statistic for me personally that comes out of the Equine Welfare Data Collective is capacity. It tells us how many horses are out there in rescues and sanctuaries and how much capacity they have. And doing this off the top of my head, Emily, but I think when Report 8 came out recently, capacity at the end of the year was 97%. So it's not like we've got a lot of empty places in these rescues and sanctuaries to take in more horses, which means what we need to do is find better ways to get horses rehomed and adopted and make them move faster. So then there's more space available for those that need to come in.
And yeah, and then you have the UHC operating at like the other end of that, right? Of trying to make it so horses don't even need to end up in sanctuaries or welfare, is that those owners get help thanks to the data that was identified out of the EWDC before they reach a crisis situation.
So I'm going to go to some other things that the foundation is really known for doing, and that is providing support to the Coalition of State Horse Councils. We just published a brand new toolkit that's got all 18 chapters of ways that state horse councils can ensure that they have a good, solid organization. We have got some emergency preparedness resources. We got the economic impact study. We partnered with the Equine Disease Communication Center. We have the microchip lookup tool that we sponsor. All these are done through our foundation. These are just industry initiatives that people said, we see a need and we want you guys to help us figure this out.
And so when you look at all those pieces together, the foundation is really kind of working across multiple aspects of the industry. We have the economic side, the welfare side, the owner support and education side. And it really just kind of strengthens the industry at a whole at a national level.
Yep. And I think it's important to emphasize that this kind of work really depends on industry support. I mean, we need the industry to come together and tell us what are the really common threads that we need to be researching and studying, just like we just did a research study on euthanasia and disposal, because what we clearly heard was that owners were struggling to understand what their options were and what they were going to cost and where to find resources. And so just those kinds of ideas that just bubble up.
Yeah. And we talked about the cost of the economic impact study. So that's like $300,000 to $400,000. The Equine Welfare Data Collective, I think, is doing its whole thing for less than $40,000 a year at this point. UHC is operating on less than $60,000 a year at this point, I think. And so there isn't a single funding source behind all these initiatives. They rely on contributions and grants from organizations and individuals kind of across the whole gamut of the industry and people who really see the value in kind of supporting these different initiatives.
So if you're listening and this conversation is resonating with you and you think, hey, I really want to support research. I want to get behind the economic impact study. There's some welfare work that I think I'd like to invest in, those kinds of issues. There's a real opportunity for you to lean in and help us with that.
And the more involvement we have, so like the more industry leaning in we have, the more comprehensive these efforts can be. And especially like, it feels so good when we go up on the hill or go to these regulatory agencies and they say, well, what are you guys doing in these spaces? And they always try to turn it around on the industry. And we can say, this is what we're doing. We're doing a lot and we're working really hard on it. And it really works to kind of strengthen everything and support the work we do in all areas.
Yep. For us, it's really, folks, all about making sure that the industry has the tools, the data, the resources we need to thrive and to move forward.
And again, we encourage everybody listening, anyone out there, doesn't matter what your role in the industry is, if you're an organization, a business, or an individual, take a closer look at the foundation, please. I know we have it drilled into our head. It's not very graceful to ask for money or support outright, but the foundation really doesn't exist without support. So consider, if you're interested in being a part of that, how you can be a part of that.
So thank you for joining us today. We'll provide more information, numbers, and links in our show notes. We invite you to support our beloved industry and join the American Horse Council, where you can earn a free subscription to our monthly newsletter and other publications. We like to share the latest in all our legislative happenings, whether they be at the federal or state level, as well as what we consider to be helpful information for horse owners like you that need to stay in the know.
And you can follow the American Horse Council on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, X, formerly Twitter, and LinkedIn. You can also subscribe to this podcast RSS feed. And you can subscribe to Horses in the Morning on any podcast player and find all the shows, including ours, on the Horse Radio Network at horseradionetwork.com.
And as we like to say, we are #HereForHorses.